some heifer things, and that's what this is going to be. And then also, because John Hall follows me, I need to tell you a story about heifers. Some of you may know that I have an older brother who's the extension veterinarian at Virginia Tech, Dee Whittier. Dee was a little more prolific than I. He has 8 children. I have 2. They tell the story about his wife, Mary Lou, being in the grocery store one day when the kids were a little younger, and the fellow behind them, as they were checking out, you know, going through and checking out, he kind of started to count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and said, "Ma'am, just how many children do you have?" "Well, we have 8. He said, "Well, that's a little expensive, isn't it?" She says, "Oh, you don't understand. We don't buy them. We raise them." Anyway, what I'd like to do is take you through some, and it may not be earth-shattering, but some things that pull together related to heifer management and their lifetime productivity. I remember Dad, as I was a kid, he used to have this occasionally. He'd say, "Once an early calver, always an early calver." Now, he didn't probably have a lot of data behind that. I'm not sure that's absolutely true in every situation. But I think you've observed that, too. There's 3 pieces of literature that I can find, and unfortunately, they don't go as deep as perhaps we'd like, because it's tough to get lifetime productivity data, other than retrospectively, on traits that are easy to accumulate. Okay? In other words, it would be great if we had lifetime productivity of heifers that were developed for, I don't know, some level of nutritional plan, that was consistent through the entire period of that lifetime productivity. You see where I'm going on that? That the nutritional management becomes a lot more difficult to get a firm hold of than does things like calving date or weaning weight or pregnancy rate, because those are traits that are fairly easy to measure and collect, and they're in data sets. So there's 3 data sets here. The one that we're going to talk about maybe the most, I'll try and go through these first ones a little more quickly, are retrospective, looking at the lifetime productivity. So if you've read any journal articles at all, not even journal articles, but extension publications, this reference back to Les Meister's work, published back in 1973, and that's not as far back as you, at least I don't know, that's the year I graduated from high school, okay? That was 40 years ago, though, and 73 doesn't sound that old. Some Montana data, Rick Funston at Nebraska, recently published a summary of the Goodmanson Sand Hills Laboratory cow herd over a period of years. And then this final one that we've collected, John E. Rouse Beef Improvement Center. I'm going to address them somewhat as case studies. Okay, so this is the Les Meister project, where they looked at the date of first calving of 481 cows and the subsequent calf production of the number of calves that they had. They had data on, okay? And those calves, those cows, were from the 1950s and 1960s. Published in 73, Journal of Animal Science, part of a Western Region Research Project W1. And you, some of you geneticists, in fact, I understand that our geneticist, Mark Enns, from Colorado State, was in the W1, they renamed a little bit, the meeting just ahead of this. So that's a regional research project, coordinated objectives over a period of time. 2 sets of cows, one at Bozeman, Montana, 1950 to 68, and then a second set of cows, Havre, Montana, 52 to 66. You can see the numbers of cows. These were all purebred, okay? The Havre cows mentions purebred and grade cows. Well, definitions and terminology seems to change a little bit. I would say probably we think today of these being registered straight bred or purebred cows, and the grade cows were Hereford cows, but they weren't registered, okay? So referred to as grade cows, as you see there. Published 40 years ago, as I mentioned, these were cows that, at least chronologically, would be 45 to 63. They're not that old now. Those cows are well gone by now, but that's the kind of cow that we were talking about in this particular data set. So I'm going to step through what I've termed and kind of pulled out as seven fundamental principles that relate to this general topic. First one, heifers that conceive early as yearlings during their first breeding season appear to be programmed for productive life. Now, in today's vernacular, fetal programming is a term that we're using more and more. This doesn't have anything to do, but Les Meister and his co-authors use that term, and I'll show you a few quotes from that research article. Managing first calf heifers for early calving in the optimum season, okay, a larger proportion of those heifers than needed, in other words, manage them, select or identify a larger proportion of heifers than needed, okay, to get back in to maintain the herd inventory. Pregnancy test them and call them if they're open. In that research then, heifers that conceive and calve earliest immediately indicate their reproductive efficiency and therefore a prediction of their lifetime productivity, their lifetime potential. Proper application of selection for rapid growth and early sexual maturity and get this, and adequate nutritional regimen are essential for programming those cows to have a regular calving season throughout their life. Now, as I alluded to earlier, this question or challenge of having lifetime productivity with a nutritional variable is hard to come by. But we know just, I guess, intuitively that it's going to have an effect. But by doing this the way they've described it in the data that they've shown, that will program the heifer to have a productive outcome throughout her life. Second principle from Les Meister, early born calves performed better than late born calves. In other words, if they were born early, they perform better. Quote from their data, the calving group, meaning were they early, generally thought of as the first 21 days, the second 21 days, or late, the third 21 days, for a particular calf, had a highly significant effect on his performance from birth to weaning. Calves born earlier in the normal season weighed more at weaning than later calves due to their older age and faster rate of gain. I went back and looked at that because, as I'll show you, we may not have time for the data, but in Rick Funston's paper, that I'll show you in a minute, he raises the question that age is probably the factor more than a difference in average daily gain to that point. So I put here at the bottom, that's probably due more to age having heavier calves than it may not be to average daily gain of those calves. Okay, the whole morning this morning was spent on crossbreeding or straight breeding. And as I sat there and listened, I thought this would be an important point to pull out of that older data on straight bred calves. Release of dominance expressed as heterosis in reproductive traits is real. That came through real loud and clear this morning, I think. Whether you're on the straight bred or the crossbred indicator side, that heterosis is true. You saw several slides to show that. At Haver, Montana, in that early study, there were four different closed lines. Okay, this was part of the W1 line breeding Hereford project. The Haber-Cross line cows were line 5. I don't remember, didn't really look back to see what those lines were selected for. But the mating of the line 1 against the line 4 cows to come up with this line 5, which was a cross line. Now, granted, not crossbred, but crossed across divergent lines. The cross line, or the line 5, consistently showed better performance than the straight line cows and earlier initial calving groups than the mean of the straight bred line. In other words, guess what? Heterosis, or release of dominance, the calves did have heavier birth weight. Again, you saw that information this morning on cross breeds. Heavier weaning weights, older weaning ages, higher average daily gains than straight line calves. And then they're called inbreeding depression, because that's what those lines had been selected and were inbred, and heterosis were evident. You've seen this data this morning too, but I throw this in just to remind us all that this, that last principle showed, where is it? Release of dominance expressed as heterosis in reproductive traits is real. So this data from Cundiff and the other three breed rotation studies shows that 23.1% increase in cumulative hybrid vigor. Again, this is cross breeds, not line breeds, but the same principle exists. And then I think from the cowherd standpoint, the probability of a cow surviving. Remember this morning, if you were there, you saw that that longevity was a trait of important interest relative to the discussion that was going on before. Expressed another way, the longevity, the number of years that the crossbred compared to the straightbred, the lifetime productivity of the crossbred compared to the straightbred. Okay, that's case study number one. Just a few principles out of that. Number two, this is the Funston data from the Sandhills on cows in the 1990s and 2000s. So we've moved up a couple of decades in relation to when this data were collected and the information. Published Journal of Animal Science last year. The objective was to determine the effect of time of calving on calf growth rate and the impact on reproductive performance. About 1,100 heifer calves, 97 to 2009. A couple of things to remember as you look at this data. The lifetime productivity, the offspring, the two-year-olds were excluded. Okay, the data, the information from the two-year-olds, because, as Rick and the other authors indicate, the management of the two-year-olds was different than the management of older, basically because they calved the two-year-olds earlier. And secondly, that all heifers were retained as replacements and put through their development system to evaluate their productivity. And then they classified them as being born in the first, second, or third 21-day period. Number one principle. Heifers born early in relation to their herd mates increase the likelihood that they will conceive. Okay, if they're born early, guess what? Not surprising, they're more likely to conceive early in their first breeding season. Early calvers tend to stay early calvers. Or born early tends to allow them to breed early. Here's the data from Rick's study, the calving periods 1, 2, 3, and the particular information across here. It's in yellow. That shows that statistically, when Rick and the statisticians did the statistics, it showed that those numbers, whether they're, I guess that would be in a row here. So weaning weight, heavier, if they were born in calving period 1, then calving period 2 or calving period 3. The important, what I think is worth considering, is that as they evaluated those heifers, and I don't remember now whether they were taking blood samples or visually observing or what have you, but determining what percent were cycling at the beginning of the start of the breeding season, you can see a marked increase in the number of heifers, the percentage of heifers that were cycling when the breeding season began, if they were bred or born rather in the early calving season. Principle 5 basically follows that same thing. If they were cycling early and conceived early, then, as you would expect, they would calve early. So here's the data that indicates that. So the difference in birth date compared to zero, or the beginning calving date, calving on average, this would be the heifer progeny of those heifers based on when they were born. With me? So we're actually looking at the second generation and the effect of when the dam was born. Catherine's first 21 days. If she was born early, then her heifer progeny tended to calve early. Not a lot different than what Dad used to tell me as a boy. But here's the data and then some information from that. Number 6, now this is one that, because of the way they collect the data in a very systems approach, which I commend them for doing that, they were able then to also measure the performance of the steer calves, and stated that the steer progeny from early calving cows produced higher value carcasses than late calving cows. I think this is, it's the first that I've seen reported that in, as far as a lifetime outcome. So here's the table. Again, calving period 1, 2, or 3. The probability values over there for you statisticians. And the bottom line here, where they did actually evaluate and measure carcass value. You reach down through there, you got heavier carcass weight, a little more quality, and that translated into more value for carcasses of steer calves that were born to cows that calved early. Case study number 3. Now, this is the CSU information. In 91 to 2010, so maybe even moving up another decade or two, at least as far as the data information that we've accumulated. Additionally, then, in this particular project, we were able to look at comparison of whether they were synchronized, because all these cows, I'll tell you more about that in a minute, were synchronized and were given an opportunity for AI compared to later conception, which would basically later natural service or cleanup bull conception on lifetime productivity of about 1,000 females. Okay? Published in Professional Animal Sciences earlier this year, difference in lifetime productivity of beef heifers that conceived the first artificial insemination. Okay, did they or didn't they conceive when given that opportunity? Or to a cleanup bull via natural service as yearlings, and then following them, and I'll show you this information, among females that were offspring of either that AI mating or the natural service mate. Okay, so we've actually got kind of 2 or 3 generations wrapped up in this study. We appreciate Select Sires. We were able to secure one of the research grants and appreciate the support of what they do, and that's evident in the BIF meetings of all the industry support that comes from our friends in the industry. Okay, the objectives were, and maybe the title kind of illustrates that, but once again, females that were synchronized and conceived early, AI, versus natural service, cleanup bulls, during the breeding season. The difference in lifetime productivity, and then the difference in lifetime productivity, females that resulted in either, resulted from those mates. Okay, you with me? 1,173 Angus females, about 7,600 records conceived AI or natural service. The bulls went in 10 days after AI. Pretty standard in the university herd and maybe in some other seedstock herds. The management of the yearling heifers is an important thing, and again, not atypical. The yearling heifers were AI'd 3 to 4 weeks before the cows. Now, this is a little bit atypical, but there were some reasons for that. The AI, the sires used for AI in the yearling heifers, not in the cows, but in the yearling heifers, were the same sires that were used as cleanup bulls. Okay? Again, that's not typical, but because of the high altitude research objective, brisket disease, and where they're monitoring that, and this range, the Meat Improvement Center, is actually in Wyoming, Saratoga, Wyoming, over the line, but at an elevation where brisket disease research can be done, and the animals need to be adapted to that. Okay? So, and that would likely, obviously does, reduce some of the benefits of using elite genetics through AI. Okay, so this would be not necessarily allowing us to look at the benefits of using outside sires widely, but more particularly just the effect of AI, or more particularly estrus synchronization. The cows, on the other hand, were AI'd both to some outside sires to reduce the inbreeding, and also then AI to some of the range produced in the design that the geneticists at that center, Mark Enns and Milt Thomas now, are undertaking. Okay, second point. All the females, both the heifers and the cows, standard approach is to annually synchronize them. Okay, use some level of estrus synchronization, and over that period of years, that varied from exclusively a fixed time AI to exclusively an observed insemination or estrus situation, or a combination thereof. Because of the research objectives, that wasn't consistent year to year, but you see that. And as I said earlier, the bulls went in 10 days earlier. Now, I put this in here to remind us all that time of calving can be very dependent upon synchronization. Okay? And in those earlier two studies, I'm not so sure about the Funston, Nebraska study, but I know clearly in the Montana study those cows were not synchronized. But synchronization, if all the animals, whether they're heifers or cows, are cycling at day one, you're only going to get 5% of them each day to show heat, just because of the randomness of when the heat cycles occur. And so you have that broad 21-day period where, I mean, a cow that happened to be in heat the day before you put the bull in, or the day before you started AI, she's got to wait 20 to 21 days until she has an opportunity to breed again. You see what I mean? On the other hand, with some of the tools we have today for synchronization, it's not uncommon to get 90 to 95, maybe up to 100% of the cycling cows to show estrus in about a 24-hour period or less. Okay, so can you see what that would do to the advantages of getting cows and or heifers and then cows to start this process along their train of lifetime productivity earlier than if we were just waiting for a non-synchronized natural event? I think the other key thing for the purpose of synchronization is to endure that with the seeder in particular, today with the tools that are on the market, inducing fertile ovulation in anestrous female, whether they be prepubertal heifers or anestrous cows. And if you were in the symposium last night, Dave Patterson showed, what did he show? About 50%, 55% conception to cows that had not shown heat. And to me, again, that's a real advantage in the purpose of synchronization. Okay, let me remind you, as we move into the data, remind you a little bit about some of the cautions related to this study, or at least a reminder. National service did not begin at the same time AI began. Okay, so that's obviously going to have an effect as we look at today. Bulls could only breed females that did not conceive AI. So if you really want to strictly look at a comparison between natural service and AI, this is not a good data set to do that, because you're comparing apples and oranges rather than apples to apples. And there was not a non-synchronized control group. Everything was synchronized and so on. And then, as I mentioned earlier, this full potential, the merits of using elite sires through AI was not possible because of the way that this was combined. Okay, so in order to define a conception to AI or a conception to natural service over that 20 or so year period of time, there was a little extrapolation done. Okay, this is the frequency, the percentage of females that calve during that period of time, day by day, and the days along the bottom are the day following, the number of days following that first opportunity to breed AI. Used a cutoff day of 290. Yes, that's a little broader, but that's basically the average calving day, which Dr. Enns tells us in that herd is about 280 days, plus or minus two standard deviations. In order, and yes, there may be a little noise right along this line, but you can see how the calving distribution sorts itself out. Okay. Whether did they conceive early or late as yearlings? This couple of columns is the heifer herself performance, and then this is the performance of the calves from that particular early to AI or late to national service or cleanup bulls. You see the heifer performance following very closely to what those two other case studies have shown. Oops, that's a mistake. That's not 220 pounds. That's 20 pounds. But yearling weight was 20 pounds heavier in as yearlings if they were born to AI or born to natural service. Age varied by 11 days. So born early versus born late. The performance of the calves. In other words, the second generation, the number of calves, the lifetime productivity, birth weight was increased, weaning weight was 11 pounds heavier, age was 2 days earlier at weaning, and then the total weaning weight varied by 963 pounds. Okay? 963 pounds of offspring if they calved early, bred early, conceived early, compared to breeding at a later time. Our economists worked through that with us, used some prices from Torrington, Wyoming, suitable comparison, and helped us calculate then a lifetime revenue. $922 advantage if they conceived early versus they conceived late. Last principle, or principle number 7. Yearling heifers that respond to estrous synchronization and conceive early in AI produce greater lifetime revenue than heifers that conceive to natural service. How much can you put into the management, whether that be whatever it is, nutrition, synchronization, what have you, to assure that your AI program is as successful as it can be compared to the value that calves, the offspring from the cleanup bull? It says $922. Okay, the second generation of that then was, as we wrap this up, is that the offspring of the early versus the late conception. So there were heifers sired by AI who became dams. There were heifers sired by natural service who became dams. And then the cows, after they'd been through this process, were they a cow that resulted from an AI mating herself or from natural service? this is a busy slide, there's a lot of numbers on it, but I'll draw your attention just to the female performance, meaning whether this column and those same trends we've talked about this whole presentation. Yearling weights were heavier. They were born early, and in this case, AI. I've explained the limitations there. Age at AI, greater in both cases, compared to the natural service of the cleanup bowl. And you can see the rest of the results. There was no statistical difference, before I go on, no statistical difference, significant difference, in the performance of their calves when sectioned out in the way that we did this with those four categories. Nor was there any difference in lifetime revenue, again, using the actual value of the calves computed in a very systematic way. The paper we published will take you through that if you want to look in at a little more detail. But no statistical difference in the lifetime revenue based on this categorization. Okay, so what? You've thrown three studies at me, maybe bored me to death, the lights are dark, and you've gotten to sleep. Let me just summarize. Managing heifers to calve during the beginning of the calving period, programs them for productive lives. Remember that word programming that we talked about in Lesmeister's study. They're older and heavier calves, and they have more calves. I might have skipped through that fairly quickly, but the number of calves born was greater. And their calves perform better. The heifer progeny, again, coupling kind of all of these studies together, heifer progeny conceive earlier and therefore calve earlier. Their steer progeny had higher value carcasses, heavier, higher quality in the way that the Nebraska data showed that. Secondly, estrus synchronization is a tool for producing early calving heifers. That idea of moving them up, allowing them to breed at an earlier time, and that carrying through throughout their lifetime. Heifers born to AI, again in that early group at the Saratoga Beef Improvement Center, had a value of $922 compared to heifers that were resulting from the cleanup bowl. Okay, put it together. I don't know if this is the only approach, but I know one of the approaches that some are using at this point would be to retain a higher percentage of heifer calves than is needed, develop them at a more moderate, yet adequate, less expensive rate of gain, synchronize them with some of the tools we have today, and why not use AI if you're going to go to the challenge of synchronizing to get that distribution different. Don't turn in cleanup bowls. They're going to cost you, in the end, bowls, you're selling bowls, you probably don't like me to say that. And this is only talking about the heifers, okay? This is the heifer management. Don't cleanup bowls. Crank check them early. I think it was Matt Spangler this morning that made the comment about we ought to be selecting for fertility by some method, not selecting for infertility by culling cows at the end after they fail. Remember that? You were there? And I think perhaps this approach would allow that to select for fertility. Did they synchronize? Did they get bred early? And those that aren't pregnant, depending upon your cost structure, if you got the resources and so on, you basically stockered those heifers, and you'll have other options for them in the stocker market. And therefore, and going back to this earlier comment, that these type of things, by having a heifer calf early, you program her to be a productive cow throughout the remainder of her life. With that, thank you.